number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
On the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
And we welcome you into Yahoo Sports Radio. I am Tony D, taking you through the night tonight. And an interesting night it was in Oakland, where the Golden State Warriors rebounded nicely, beating Oklahoma City 118-91. They won by 27. Pouring it on in the third quarter. But the series is now even. They head back to Oklahoma City on Sunday. That's a long time. This is a good gap of time between Games 2 and Games 3. And the Oklahoma City Thunder, who used a lot of things to their advantage in Game 1, really didn't have those advantages in Game 2. They were out-rebounded. They struggled to shoot the ball. Golden State got Steph Curry rocking and rolling. And, Curry struggled a bit in Game 1. He did not struggle in Game 2, as he was really the catalyst, especially in that third quarter. But, again, the Thunder get the split. They may not be leaving Oakland feeling like they got a split. There's a lot of emotion of, man, we got really roughed up, but they got the split. Will that carry over into Game 3? How much confidence do they still have? We talked to Lang Green last hour. He felt that there was some confidence still, but when you get beat like this in Game 2, it does carry over into Game 3. It's not like the Thunder lost a close game and got the split. They got rolled. This was the Warriors waking up. And the resiliency of the Warriors is fascinating because they don't lose back-to-back games. And this wasn't a must-win for them, but boy, it was close. Let's be honest. It would have been a really hard road for the Warriors if they lost this game to win 4 out of the next 5, even though they're a 73-win team. And sure, they could have done it because if anybody could do it, it would be them. But that's hard to do, especially when a team feels like it now has your number. All the conversation about the Thunder. Look, it's amazing what they can erase. It's amazing what the Warriors can erase from our psyche. After Game 1, even I was saying, look, this is an interesting series now. The Thunder aren't afraid of this Golden State team. Now, the Warriors said, well, there's reason to fear us. There's reason to be afraid. Look what we can do in a quick amount of time. We can take your one-point advantage and turning it into an eight-point deficit, and we can do it in less than a minute. And we can do it before you even blink. We're quick in transition, and when we get the basketball, we can shoot. And when we're hot, we can really shoot. And when we're really hot, you're dead. And that's what the Warriors did. Steph Curry went into the crowd to get a loose ball. No one in Oakland seemed to care and let him fall to the ground. Shame on you. You can't be a real fan if you don't protect your star player. I said earlier tonight that I would have jumped right in front of him and protected him, and I probably wouldn't. I probably would have ran screaming, afraid to get hurt. Maybe it's the Silicon Valley softies in the front seat. I don't know. Mark Spears said tonight there was a famous rapper that was there. He didn't even bother to catch Steph Curry. How could you not catch Steph Curry? How come I can go to a rock concert and, I don't know, Axl Rose could jump into the crowd and they'd immediately catch him and hoist him up? No pre-planning. No one's going to let Axl Rose fall to the ground. No one's going to let the lead singer of, whatever band is popular these days, forgive me. You don't fall to the ground. They hoist you right up. How can Steph Curry go into the crowd and 5 or 6 people completely avoid him and let him crash land on a metal separator and have his elbow look like it was swollen, like a golf ball was lodged inside? You see that thing? Looked hideous. You got to protect your stars, Golden State. Come on, he's the key. You think LeBron, LeBron's a bigger guy. You think LeBron would have that trouble in Cleveland? No, people would die before they let LeBron James collapse onto
Jason
chair.
Day's wife tried helping LeBron.
Remember Jason Day's wife was protecting LeBron while Jason Day ran like a child from LeBron James? Even Jason Day's wife was like, I'm going to let LeBron James fall to the ground. I will sacrifice my body and soul to keep LeBron James healthy. People in Oakland were like, whoa!
Steph
what is
Curry
this?
Weighs like 114 pounds.
Oh, my God. He weighs like my child.
He probably could have just like caught him, like just caught him like a baby and just held him there.
Yeah, held him in his arms. People treated him like he had polio. Falling into the crowd like, what is this thing that's falling? Ah! Steph Curry, man. You got to catch him. You got to put him back up. People in Oakland. That should be a meme. It's got to be a meme by now, right? You internet guys out there that send me memes all the time, find one or create one. It's Steph Curry. And you know what's going to be funny? Steph Curry had to have been thinking, really? Like when he was on the ground? Wow, nobody? Not one person protected my fall? They just let me fall into the ground? Crash. Let me tell you what, if those guys knew if they went into the crowd that they would get banged up like that, they'd be less NBA players going into the crowd. They sort of anticipate that you'll protect them. Not fall to the metal. You see the picture of the metal separator that he fell on? I think it looked like it beat you up. It's not a Casper mattress, for crying out loud, that he's landing on. All right, 800-777-2907. The New York Knicks are going to be hiring, it looks like, Jeff Hornacek as their new head coach. Now, before you go, wait, what? Yeah, Phil Jackson and Hornacek had dinner, and now it's being reported that while a deal has not been finalized, this is where the Zen Master is going. Is this surprising? Yes. Let me tell you why. Hornacek doesn't run the triangle. He doesn't know the triangle. He's never taught the triangle. Phil Jackson has preached the triangle and even just recently said that the guy he wants is somebody that's a disciple of the triangle. Now, I'm thinking something rather interesting occurred between the time Phil Jackson left for vacation and when he came back to hire Jeff Hornacek. Like maybe, just maybe, whatever Zen moment that he had where he thought, you know, triangle, I'm going to have to go in another direction. It reminds me of that Matthew McConaughey movie about the Marshall football team. Did you see that one? We Are Marshall?
No, I never did see it.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's a really good movie. But he plays Jack Langle in the movie. And Langle goes to a Marshall. And he's, you know, it's a tragedy. The plane had crashed, killing almost the entire football team. And he's got to start from scratch. And he brings in freshmen. And he gets a waiver so that freshmen can play. And in the movie, when he's interviewing for the job, he talks about the power eye. That's his football. That's his go-to football. Power eye. And he starts breaking it down. Power eye. Well, he gets there and he realizes he doesn't have the personnel. So he's with his coaches and he goes, power eye. I live it. I love it. But it goes in the trash. And they have to come up with a new scheme because they don't have the personnel to run that. And they come up with the Veer. And then they go to West Virginia to research the Veer and all that other stuff. That's what I wonder if Phil Jackson came to the conclusion with the triangle. Like, that goes in the trash. I gotta do something else. Because Kurt Rambis was his guy. And apparently it wasn't Carmelo's guy or anybody else on the Knicks guy. So Phil Jackson is the boss only to an extent, because James Dolan was probably like, hey, Phil, while we love you and we gave you a lot of money, our guys don't like Kurt. And by the way, this triangle thing, can we do something else? And Phil had to go, all right, we got to do something else. I will hire Jeff Hornacek, who I like, who I wanted. He wanted to trade for Hornacek when he was a player. And so he's always liked him. He got fired in February by the Phoenix Suns because they lost like 19 out of 20 games and 14 straight on the road and had a miserable season. But Phil likes him. But I don't, to me, it doesn't really matter who Phil hires. I'm just curious about his philosophy angle to all this, because if you're not going to use the triangle, right, you can hire anybody now. And that includes Frank Vogel, David Blatt, if you like him. And now you got Jeff Hornacek. I wonder if this is the guy that makes Knicks fans go, oh yeah, probably not. But it's better than Kurt Rambis, because Kurt Rambis wasn't exactly a fan favorite, and neither was he a player favorite. Also, in some coaching news, it looks like Mike D'Antoni is going to get the Rockets job. Is there anything about the Rockets' current roster that makes you think Mike D'Antoni is going to make that work? Mike D'Antoni made it work because he had Steve Nash. But when he tried the same hurry-up offense with Kobe and Carmelo, that didn't work so well. I think this is like oil. It's not oil and vinegar. It's like oil and tomato juice. I mean, it's two totally different things. I think D'Antoni's going to have a headache. A headache. We'll see. So those two coaching hires, not so great. The guy that may be getting a great, great situation is Orlando, because they might end up getting Frank Vogel. All right, coming up next, college football. Does it have a serious problem? We'll discuss that next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the Third Shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, coming up at the bottom of the hour, Pete Futek's going to join us from College Football News. Why? There is some college football news. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. Alabama, one of their star offensive linemen, Cam Robinson, was arrested along with another teammate for possession of an illegal firearm, a stolen gun. He also was caught with marijuana. So this puts Alabama in another situation where a player of theirs has gotten in trouble with the law. What does Saban do? But also the new allegations and report that is coming out from Baylor, where a number of their players have been involved in, are accused of some serious violence, sexual assault and violence. And yet there seems to be a cover-up umbrella in Waco where cops are covering up and coaches are allowed to know about it and whatnot. And it's a real mess. Does college football have this issue? Does college football have a problem? Is the exposure now that we're starting to see more and more putting coaches in a really, not a tough spot, but a spot where they hold back on what they know is right for the sake of a larger point of winning games? Now, let me say this. This has always happened in college athletics. This is, the accusations, unfortunately, are not new. These kind of accusations have been going on in sports for a long time. Look, there's a lot of student athletes. And when you have a lot of anybody, I don't care what it is, if you have a lot of Republicans, if you have a lot of Democrats, if you have a lot of religious people, if you have a lot of atheists, it doesn't matter. If you have a large group of a particular group, then you're going to have people who are going to run afoul of the law. It doesn't mean that everybody in that group is labeled that. It means you have student athletes that have run afoul of the law. And there are other student athletes who don't run afoul of the law. So that's naturally going to happen. If you want to make it even smaller, when you have a football team on a college campus of 100 people, you're going to have some bad eggs. I don't care what school you go to, and I don't care what coach you have. We're not saying that every single student athlete needs to be an angel, although we would absolutely like it if they were. But we're realistic, and we know that there are going to be people who break the law. We always have had that in our society. We always will have that in our society. But what we're asking is, how do we respond to this? Not only as a school, but as alumni, as sports fans. How should we respond to this? Well, let's break this down for a second. Look at Baylor. You have student athletes who have been accused of doing some pretty horrible things, right? I was reading stories today of football players that grabbed girlfriends by the hair, threw them across the room, tied them to the ground, took their phones. They couldn't call for help, raped them, sexually assaulted them. There was a whole litany of horrible acts that were committed. But in our world that we live in, we also have due process. So what does that mean for a student athlete? Well, for some coaches, they want that due process to take over for them in the case of disciplining players. Because when you have a large group of football players and you have some football players that run afoul of the law, you're going to have to do your research. And you're going to have to figure out what exactly happened. And you're going to have to find out information. Because one of the things you don't want to do is just start suspending guys after every single allegation. That doesn't work. And we know that's not going to work. That anybody who says anything about any of the student athletes, and it's an automatic, well, we're going to sit him down for a while until we figure out what's going on. You'd have nobody playing. You can see where that would lead. So you can understand if a coach stands up and says, look, these are horrible acts, and I will get to the bottom of this. But also, I have to cooperate with law enforcement because this is a legal matter. This is now a judicial matter. This is going to have to run its case through the courts. This is going to have to run its case through the police. The problem is, what if those two lines are crossed? What if the football department and the investigative police department actually cross together? Now, we saw that at Florida State, where the accusations against Jameis Winston and the investigation by the police department made people go, I don't know about this. I'm not sure about this. As Pat Forty at Yahoo Sports has pointed out, a number of cops in these college towns, not all of them, but a number of them, have cozy relationships with the athletic departments, especially the football team. Now, let's take this statement and make this basic. A football coach would like to know in advance if his player is in trouble. That seems reasonable, right? A football player would like a heads up when a football player is getting arrested. Why? It's high profile. So I can understand a coach saying to the police department, hey, here's my number. Here's my assistant's number. If you find one of our guys has done something at 2 o'clock in the morning, could you give us a call and give us a heads up? We'd like to be on top of it as quickly as possible because the press gets a hold of it. Then we don't know. We'd like to know as much as we can so that when the press comes knocking on our door, we have some answers. We have a way of, so we're not shocked. So nobody from the media is calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning that tells me my star quarterback is drunk with a loaded handgun in his car. That seems reasonable, but there's a problem, and we all know what a slippery slope problem this can be. This is going on at the University of Tennessee. This is going on in a lot of places, but I know about the Tennessee situation. Butch Jones has a cozy relationship with some police in Knoxville. So he gets a heads up when his team is in trouble. The problem comes from what happens when the athletic department or the football team then takes measures to alert the player that he is being investigated in trouble. Can evidence be destroyed? Can the stories change? Can everybody sort of get on the same page before the actual investigation takes place? Before the detectives come onto a scene to assert what happens, can a football team and coach, knowing that this is coming ahead of time, deal with it the way you're supposed to, you would deal with it, albeit illegally, to try to fix the matter? That's the problem. It seemed like that was going on at Waco. That these allegations were met with a deaf response. That Art Briles didn't take the necessary steps to be transparent. That the school made no effort of being transparent. And police records disappeared and all of those things. Like I said, we're not expecting all football players, all basketball players, all student athletes to be angels. We know some of them are going to run afoul of the law. Every year we're going to have that. Every year we're going to have that. There's no way around it. There's just too many. But we need to start figuring out a way for this to be dealt with in a way that doesn't embarrass us down the line. We're all sports fans, but are you a sports fan before you're a husband or a father? Are you a sports fan before you're a brother? Are you a sports fan over everything? Do you love your football team so much that a football player that assaults a woman, that a school covering it up seems like the right thing to do? Then that's where we have a problem. Because Art Briles or Steve Spurrier or Butch Jones or anybody else should be able to say, this player has been accused of this. We have looked into it. We are letting the judicial system run its course. And anything you want to know about this, under a legal guise, we will do our best to be transparent. We'll talk to Pete Futek about this next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us. We're going to talk some college football now with Pete Futek from College Football News. With the Baylor story and what's going on in Alabama and sort of the concept of what's going to be going on in college football with expansion and whatnot, we bring in one of the best in the business. College Football News is a fantastic website. If you're not reading it, you need to be. Pete Futek joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, Pete?
One of the best in the business. What are you talking about?
I'm sorry. You are the best in the business. Your cavalcade of whimsy is the best thing on the web.
Now we can have a proper discussion. No, I'm just kidding.
Pete, let me ask you this. With the Baylor stuff, and for brevity, it's serious, but I overview, there seems to be a lot of cover-up here. There seems to be a lot of important people involved in the cover-up. What do you make of all this, of what's going on in Waco?
It's just another case of, you know, this is college football and you have, you know, very powerful people, very, you know, people don't want their fun to be taken away, especially when you've got a Baylor team that's, you know, really strong, really good. And, you know, remember, it's been such a doormat for so long. And now it's finally fun. It's a national powerhouse. Art Briles is doing big things. And yet you have players who are running rampant across the, and just the player allegedly running rampant. So it's a bad enough thing to have, you know, players with alleged, you know, violence incidents. And it's another that this has been a little bit of an issue for, you know, Baylor with just various problems across the board. So this is the off season. This is where you have it. Every year we have the same sort of thing where you have the, you know, all this, you know, what's wrong with college sports? Well, you know, when you have 128 programs and, you know, kids in the city, you're going to have, you know, incidents. And this is what happens in the off season.
There was a talk about how there were cops in Waco who, you know, helped out the football programs. That seems to be pretty common across the board. Is this a proper relationship when you have coaches that want to get a little bit of a heads up when their guys are in a little bit of trouble and police who sort of want to cozy up to football programs?
And I don't know why this can't change. Because it doesn't ever work. I mean, obviously, there's always incidents where you have, you know, the coach is always going to have, you know, knowledge of things and going to be one step ahead of it. And that's sort of how the world sort of works. But if it goes up and it blows up, then the coach always gets blamed, and very, very rightly so. It's a very easy thing that needs to start happening. This comes down from university presidents. This is where it has to just be kind of accepted that if you're a coach, the second anything legally weird happens, you come clean about it and all transparency there, and just say, out of my hands, legal system handling it. And then you let the legal system play itself out, because the second that you start playing judge and tampering and start dealing with that, it always ends up bad for the school and for the coach.
Is there an issue with school presidents who basically want their athletic departments, basically school presidents don't really want to know what's going on with their athletes?
Yeah, they do. You know, school presidents, you know, they really, because they're going to be on the line as well if this stuff starts to break out. So you have to remember, it should be about the university. And, you know, what always seems to happen is, you know, the people who, you know, do care about the school and don't care a lick about athletics or football end up getting shouted down by the meathead types, you know, who get all, you know, threatening and crazy. And that turns out to be the problem. And that's just kind of how the world works. And it works that way in all sports in that way. You always get as soon as you get the super fans who, you know, feel threatened and, you know, someone's going to ruin their fun, they all of a sudden, you know, the claws come out and they all get all nasty.
After this report starts to be digested and after this report starts to be kind of looked at nationally, is Art Briles in any trouble?
I've hit the point now where I'm just going to flatly just say no to all this. Every time you think that a coach should be in trouble, he just isn't and probably gets a raise. You know, it's just like, I don't know how Butch Jones is still at Tennessee. You know, I don't know how some of these coaches survive, you know, some of these things, but they just do. You know, it just nothing ever happens, you know, in any of these cases. It's, you know, usually you find, okay, well, a couple of players are bad apples and we got rid of them and now let's move on. You know, because the game plan on all this, for all these, anytime there's any problems, is delay, 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 delay. And the second the ball gets kicked off in late August, no one cares about any of this other stuff anymore.
Let's go to Alabama, where Cam Robinson was charged with a possession of a firearm and an illegal substance. And I know a lot of Alabama fans, and I hear from them all the time, and they say, look, you can make two arguments on Nick Saban. He'll keep really good players regardless of trouble because he wants to win football games, but he really does believe in second chances, and he really does believe in trying to use the opportunity to better people. Do you buy that Nick Saban has this sort of dual personality when it comes to athletes that are in trouble in his program?
All coaches believe in second chances when they have when it comes to a first round draft pick. You know, you don't get, you know, for as much as they want to talk about, you know, second chance, otherwise they get launched. Otherwise you get, you know, whenever you get someone who gets, you know, the nebulous violation of team rules or, you know, anything like that, that means either the kid got caught smoking weed or got caught, you know, cheating on an exam or something that they don't want to talk about. And so that's where the, you know, violation of team rules comes into play. You know, Saban is, you know, Saban, you know, he's a football coach and same sort of thing. And, you know, he's at the point though where he will discipline his guys and he will, but this is out of his hands. Again, this is where you say, look, the legal system has to play itself out because on every part of this. Otherwise, even if it doesn't, even if you have, then you can take at least the high ground on this. You know, the perfect example is, you know, Jimbo Fisher with Jameis Winston. You know, I have my own beliefs and thoughts about how this was all handled and, you know, what Jameis Winston might or might not have done. But, you know, if you're a Jimbo Fisher, you just say, you know what, we're going to let the system play itself out. And, you know, he wasn't even charged with anything. And so, okay, he's playing. Why can't he play? Because, you know, we let the legal system handle itself. As weird as the legal system was, at least that was his argument. And I think that's what you do if you're Saban. You just say, look, kid's off the team. He's not playing. And then the legal system does what it's going to do. And then that's when we go from there.
Didn't Saban get burned by this one time before with a player? He dismissed a player and then found out the accusations of the girlfriend were not accurate and he ended up being off the team?
Yeah, you know, this always happens in every way, and you always have it on all sides where, you know, it's never easy, it's never right. But again, the easiest way to do this is don't let the coach be the judge and jury on any of this stuff.
Pete Futek joins us, College Football News. Pete, I'm fascinated with people kind of speculating with all of the expansion possibilities and where TV revenue is going and what cord cutting may mean to the sport. Where do you see college football 5-10 years down the road with all of that stuff in the mix?
Yeah, I think the next wave, and I proposed this sort of a long, long time ago, and I still think it's going to kind of happen, where you're going to see the big conferences really cut away from the smaller ones. And what's going to happen is, you know, look at the week one matchups this year. I mean, there's some of the best, it's probably the best opening weekend of college football ever between, you know, just Alabama, USC, LSU, Wisconsin, Ole Miss, Florida State. You know, there's just game after game after game of just big time matchups. And I think eventually that's really what people are going to want to see more and more of. And to get that, you got to kind of dump the minor leagues. But more than that, it's a revenue thing. And, you know, the Michigans of the world don't want to split any of the pie with Eastern Michigan. And, you know, why should they? You know, they're just, you know, you're seeing more and more programs start to think, you know, why do we need football? Or at least at the FBS level. You know, UMass is taking that step down. Idaho, or thinking about taking that step down. Idaho is taking a step down. They're going to the FCS. And it's just, you know, football is very costly to run, especially if you have to fund, you know, all these other, you know, non-revenue sports. So what's going to happen, and I think you're going to see the haves and have-nots just have such a wider chasm, and then I think you're going to kind of see a whole other division of, you know, the MAC teams and some of these other programs that just, you know, don't get the attention that the bigger ones do.
Pete Futek, collegefootballnews.com, best in the business. Appreciate it, Pete. Thank you.
Anytime. Have a good one.
All right, we'll continue to talk some college football coming up as we process all of this stuff. I mean, look, I agree with what he's saying. College football, if you look at this, what's going on in Baylor and say, oh, college football is now in trouble. College football has always been in trouble with this kind of stuff. But I do think this stuff does need to be exposed. And I think collectively we have to come up with a reasonable solution so that coaches don't feel that they should be covering up this stuff because it's bad. And we should know. And there's got to be a way that a player can have his day in court, that a player can go through the due process system, because he does have that right. And we shouldn't be making judgments only on accusations. And we shouldn't just assume automatically that the accusations are true. But if they are, and there's evidence on that, then we have to decide as a sporting public how we want this stuff taken care of. Because Saban has got a player, or Art Briles has got a player, and we got to figure out what we want them to do with them. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Oh, this is one of my favorite songs, No Sleep Till Brooklyn, Beastie Boys. That goes back, man. License to Ill was my favorite cassette tape. Played it over and over and over again. I like the You Got a Right to Party song. I mean, that was like the big anthem when I was a kid. You know, you thought you were rebellious. The Beastie Boys had some great stuff. 800-777-2907. You know what? I'm going to give advice of the night. If you go to Dairy Queen and you're a Peanut Buster Parfait fan, get extra peanuts. Delish. We took our kids out to celebrate their graduations, quote unquote. And I use quote unquote because my daughter graduated from fifth grade into sixth, going to middle school. And my son graduated from eighth grade, now going into high school. And these aren't graduations. I went to two ceremonies. And my son, my daughter at least didn't have to have a cap and gown. My son had a cap and gown graduating eighth grade. My wife, no problem with this. Loved it. Thought it was great. Me? I'm like, wait a minute. I grew up in a small town. We didn't have this. Uh-uh. I got him a cake. We took him out to dinner. We took him out to ice cream tonight to get for making honor roll. I've had more sweets. And I'm trying to lose weight. And I've had more sweets this week than I need. It's probably why my stomach is upset tonight. I was talking to Adam about this before the show. My stomach is all like in knots.
I've got the...
Probably why.
I've got my daughter's preschool graduation tonight.
Oh, yeah, that's great. They're going to read Oh, the Places You'll Go by Dr. Seuss? Because that's what they tend to read as the young kids move on to the world. When my daughter graduated kindergarten, I made a big stink out of that. But my daughter's kindergarten teacher looked like a model.
Oh, so that's always good.
She's drop-dead gorgeous. We were in Denver. She was gorgeous.
So any chance you got to go to the school was a good
thing. Yeah. Even my let me tell you something. She was so good looking. Even my wife said, yeah, she's good looking. even my wife had no problems with me saying that.
Yeah.
Like she was like, yeah, she was. She was really cute. She was really cute. But I went to the ceremony. This eighth grade stuff was crazy. I mean,
I grew up
in a small school. I didn't get that. I mean, we went from eighth grade to ninth grade in the same building.
Yeah, we had that in Illinois in my town, and I know all the surrounding towns do it as well.
Big graduation, man. They got you. They trap you in. They suck you in.
And what's worse is the fact that you got to sit through it. I mean, my school, I can't give you an exact number, but we were probably 150 kids in my graduating class in eighth grade. So, I mean, you'd have to sit through all the names, just like a regular graduation.
Yeah, we went through, this was Tuesday when we had my son's graduation.
Yeah.
And we sat through, and there was all the kids were lined up. And they did, they did the awards, like top grade in math, right. Top grade in English. And here's the people who most improved. And here's some spring athletic awards that we want to recognize. And so they went through all of that. Then the band played a couple of songs. And it was hot. It was in the gym. And it was... It's all steamy and everything like that. And then they announce the kids, and they all line up, and they're like, Amy Adams, Abigail Alexander. Yeah, and you're like, oh, how many kids are there? My God. They got to my kid. I went, woohoo. Then I went, I'm done, right? Like, yep. I looked at my wife, like, can we leave? And my wife's like, no, you can't leave. You're staying right here until this is over. And then you do your pictures, and that's it. But big graduations got me under my thumb, man. And I got 4 years to graduate high school. My daughter will graduate eighth grade. I got to do this all over again. Buy more cap and gowns. I mean, and then more streamers and more cake and more cards and more presents and all. It was ridiculous. But you know what I'm becoming? I'm becoming a little snob. That's what I'm becoming. That's my problem.
Graduations are one of the hardest things to sit through, though, like you said.
No, terrible.
I mean, you're not watching anything. You're watching somebody walk across the stage to get a piece of paper, and
that's
then
it.
They go sit down. And you're waiting for all of 4 seconds to hear your kid's name.
That's it. It's unreal. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. All right, coming up in the next hour, we got Adam's News of the Night, and then we will also break down the night in Major League Baseball, which I thought was pretty fun tonight. There was a couple of games that were, you know, pretty interesting, so I'll break that down for you. We were talking earlier with Pete Futek from collegefootballnews.com about college football and some of the serious sides of what's been going on in the news, the Baylor situation, the Baylor cover-up. And as I was saying earlier, you can understand a coach's want and desire to have a heads up from the police department when his players are in trouble. It allows them to sort of get their story straight. It allows them to answer this properly to the media when questioned about it. But it can really lead to some shady stuff. And I don't know how, as a coach, that you don't do this. I don't, like, if you're a coach, this is something you're not going to give up unless you have to. So it's really a strange situation for college sports to be in right now, because we're seeing more of this kind of stuff and people are demanding answers, but we don't know really what the answers are going to be. How do you take care of this? How do you resolve these legal issues? If a player is under an investigation for an accusation, does that warrant a suspension? Should we suspend just because you've been accused? Should we suspend just because you're in that cloud of suspicion? I don't know. I mean, look, if we wouldn't want that to happen in any other walk of life, if we were wrongfully accused of something, we wouldn't want our lives to be disrupted until the legal system came in and said, nope, you did do this. A jury of your peers have found you guilty. Here's the punishment. But in athletics, perception does carry some weight. And if you're a coach, you don't want to have to fight the accusations from people that say, hey, you just want to win. You just keep these guys, these troublemakers, these criminals, you keep them on your team because they help you win. That's why Nick Saban is not jumping the gun on Cam Robinson. On the one hand, Cam Robinson helps him win football games. But on the other hand, we got to let the judicial system play out and actively state, hey, he did commit this crime. We have investigated this. This is what we know. This is what he's going to go, you know, what his punishment's going to be. And then Nick Saban can act. But he also needs to say, I run a clean program. And sometimes it means suspending guys before the judicial system. Yahoo Sports Radio.